What I want to go into a little bit more depth in now is what's commonly called the three sufferings. Yeah, I mean, we had the six, then we have the eight, now we have the three. And it's just another way of presenting it. We went over this when we first talked about the Four Noble Truths, but I think it's helpful to go into more depth right now. And these three unsatisfactory conditions kind of permeate all, one or more permeate all realms in cyclic existence. And so this is, thinking about this is designed to help us go beyond just wishing for a good rebirth, you know, but to see the defects in that and therefore to wish for liberation. So there's three unsatisfactory conditions. One is suffering, yeah, the unsatisfactoriness of suffering. Then we have the unsatisfactoriness of change. Then we have pervading, compounded unsatisfactoriness. I wish there were a nice word for the translation of dukkha instead of unsatisfactoriness, or suffering is worse, you know, but the Sanskrit word is dukkha. Okay? So the unsatisfactoriness of suffering is feelings, both mental and physical, that all beings acknowledge as painful. Okay, so this is basically painful feelings, unpleasant feelings. They can be physical ones, you know, like stubbing our toe or having an upset stomach. They can be mental ones, like getting depressed or anxious, something like that. Unpleasant feelings that we experience. Yeah, and this is, you know, again, experienced by animals, by the beings in the hell realms, and by the hungry ghosts. You know, physical, mental suffering. The mental suffering is also experienced by some of the desire realm gods, these gods who live in, you know, super deluxe sense pleasure. Yeah. And I'll explain more about that when I tell you about their lives and what they go through. Yeah. And then the second one is the unsatisfactoriness of change. Okay, and this refers to pleasant feelings, happy feelings, things that we normally consider happy. Now, why would we say that this is unsatisfactory? Yeah, why do we say that happy feelings are unsatisfactory? Or if you use the old translation, that happy feelings are suffering. See, that's why suffering doesn't fit, doesn't work so well. But why are happy feelings unsatisfactory? Well, because they don't last very long. Yeah? And because we have to arrange so many external conditions to get them, so we have to put in a lot of energy into getting them. And also, if, you know, all the things that we do that bring us pleasant feelings, by their very nature, these feelings are not kind of really inherently pleasurable. Okay? It's like when you're sitting down and your knees hurt, then all you want to do is get up. When you stand up, standing is pleasurable. But if you keep standing and keep standing, it becomes painful, doesn't it? The same activity of standing, which at the beginning was pleasurable, later becomes painful. So that activity in and of itself is not pleasurable. Why do we call it pleasurable then when we first stand up? It's because the suffering of sitting down has gone away, and the suffering of standing up is real small at that point when we first stood up. But as we stand longer, that suffering, which was real small, grows and grows and grows and grows until it becomes painful. So on that small amount of suffering, unsatisfactoriness that we have when we first stand up. We give it the label pleasure. We label it pleasure because the gross discomfort of sitting down has ceased. And the gross discomfort of standing up hasn't yet arisen. It's just a little discomfort. So we call it pleasure. Yeah. It's the same thing when you're eating. You're really, really hungry. Yeah? I mean, there's this gross feeling of hunger. It's really horrible. When you start to eat, wow, pleasure, bliss, you know, wonderful. Yeah, the cat dived into my spaghetti tonight. He loved it. Yeah. Okay, so we call that pleasurable, but what is it? Yeah, the feeling of hunger has gone away. The unpleasant feeling of hunger has gone away. And the unpleasantness of eating is real small. Because if we keep eating and eating and eating, it definitely becomes quite unpleasant, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, if you sit there and stuff your face, it's just horrendous. It's very, very painful. Yeah? And which is more painful, having a stomach that's too full so you feel like you're going to throw up, or being hungry? I mean, they're different forms of pain, aren't they? But they're both physical pain. So that pain that comes from eating is still very, very small at that moment when you first start eating after you're hungry. So we label it pleasure, we label it happiness. But in and of itself, that feeling is not happiness. It's not pleasure. Because if that feeling were inherently pleasurable, then the more we ate, the happier we should be. Yeah. But quite the opposite happens. So it's like with anything that we do, seeking pleasure, it's nice for a while, and then it goes bad. Yeah. And just try and think of anything that you do that is conditioned by disturbing attitudes and karma. Anything we do seeking worldly pleasure, we start out with some pleasure, but if we keep doing the same thing, it goes bad. There's nothing we've been able to find that if we kept doing it, it always gets better. Because if we had found something that if we kept doing it, it always gets better, we would be doing that and not sitting here. Okay, is it real love? Okay, you're with a fantastic person, and you're with them, and it's wonderful. And then you're with them another hour, and another hour, and another hour, and another hour. As one person said, I went to this one thing, this isn't my job. If you say that you've been married 10 years and you haven't had a fight, it tells me that either you don't live together or you don't speak. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, who do you know? I mean, it's again, people might say, oh, this is happy, but they're picking out certain things that label happiness on. But with any relationship with any person, there's difficulties. Yeah, you might care about that person very much, but there's times when you really, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going on there too, different feelings. So the same person that at one time causes us to have a pleasurable feeling can also cause us to have a painful feeling. Yeah. It happens all the time. So this is why that it's an unsatisfactory condition of change, because the pleasurable thing changes into something unpleasant if you just keep doing it long enough. And why doesn't the pleasure keep lasting? Because it's in the nature of unsatisfactoriness. Because it's governed by disturbing attitudes and karma. So we're coming back to the causes of the whole thing again, the disturbing attitudes and karma. Okay? So we've looked at unpleasant feelings, the suffering, you know, the unsatisfactoriness of suffering. We've looked at pleasant feelings as also being unsatisfactory because they change. Then what about neutral feelings? Okay, or contaminated feelings of equanimity? We're just neutral. Yeah? These are, you know, in some way, I mean, they're definitely better than out-and-out suffering. Okay? And when you get to higher, you know, this is one of the reasons why people develop a lot of very, very deep concentration. At the beginning of their concentration, they get incredible feelings of happiness, but then they transcend that and they go to feelings of equanimity, just a feeling of neutrality, which, you know, is supposedly better than some of the happy feelings that you get when you have deep concentration. And yet that is not free of the disturbing attitudes and karma. People still have that. So it's contaminated equanimity or contaminated neutrality. Well, what's unsatisfactory about that? Well, that just when you have it, you may have a neutral feeling, but because you're still under the control of disturbing attitudes and karma, all it takes is the slightest little change in circumstance and you experience overt suffering again. Yeah. So if you take just like a neutral feeling that we have, I mean, kind of, you know, your little toe right now, it's not feeling very painful. It's probably not feeling incredibly blissful. You're probably not thinking very much about your little toes. Okay, kind of neutral feeling. Yeah. But this neutral feeling is, all it takes is the slightest little condition, and that neutral feeling becomes a painful one. All it takes is the cat to jump on you with his claws, okay, or stepping on a thorn, or stepping on a nail, or going in the bathtub that's too hot, yeah, or putting your foot in something else that's too cold. It's like the slightest little change in condition, and what was a neutral feeling, yeah, and so it's just like, it's ready, it's like, almost all the circumstances are there to change into something unpleasant. So that's why just being content with a neutral feeling, again, it's not liberation, it's not satisfactory, because as long as we're under control of disturbing attitudes and karma, boing, the whole thing comes again. Okay, so it's called pervading. Because we said it was the unsatisfactoriness of being, pervading compounded unsatisfactoriness. Okay, so it's pervading because it pervades the feeling of pain and pleasure. It's like it's there, kind of, you know, this whole condition of being under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma pervades feeling of pain and pleasure because they're all conditioned by it. Okay, it's pervading because it pervades all of the realms in cyclic existence. Anywhere you take rebirth, you have this kind of unsatisfactory condition. It pervades everything, you know. It pervades, you know, our whole body in that the body is just set up, any part of it, to experience suffering. Yeah. So it pervades our body, it pervades any kind of body, it pervades any kind of aggregates that you get in cyclic existence. Yeah? That it's just set up for the experience of pain with the slightest change of condition. Okay? Aggregates are the body and mind. Yeah? It's said that we have five aggregates. Yeah, one is the physical one, the form aggregate, and then four are mental ones. Okay, different components of our mind, different aspects of our mind, I should say. And it's called compounded or conditioned because, you know, again, because it's set up, it's so conditioned, it arose in such a way that by its very nature, it can experience the other two kinds of unsatisfactoriness. Yeah. So it's like, it's conditioned, it's compounded. Compounded means conditioned, okay, put together, assembled by through condition. It's conditioned through the disturbing attitudes and karma. Okay? Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what you meant by pervading. I know
you
said it's everywhere.
Yeah, it pervades any kind of rebirth that you take in cyclic existence, from the lowest one in the hell realms to these super duper sense pleasure deluxe in the God realms, to the very high stages when you have total single point of concentration. Yeah. Which is why those realms of single point of concentration, if they don't have wisdom, you know, it's still pervading suffering, because you have this incredible neutral feeling, but as soon as that karma runs out, yeah, you know. And so they say that we ourselves have been reborn in those incredible states with single point of concentration. I mean, imagine this. We've all had single point of concentration in previous lives. Yeah. We've been born everywhere in cyclic existence, so we've been born in, you know, the form realm and the formless realm, so they have this incredible concentration. But because we never freed ourselves from the ignorance, we had the great happiness, we had the equanimity feeling, but then the karma ran out, the karma which conditioned that rebirth, the karma which compounded that rebirth ran out, yeah, and then back to a rebirth where there's more overt pain. Yeah, I think your mind would definitely be a lot peaceful, a lot more peaceful. Yeah? Because I think so much of the pain, you're right, is coming about because we don't want change. Yeah? So I think a lot of the mental pain that comes about because we reject change, accepting this would eliminate a lot of that. It would eliminate, like, the mental pain that accompanies getting old and sick and dying and all these other kinds of mental pain. You may still have the physical pain. Yeah, you know. I mean, when you stub your toe, yeah. But you won't have all the mental pain that goes along with it that we add on and that we confuse so often with the physical pain. Yeah. It's real. Sometimes we have a real hard time distinguishing what's coming from, like, the physical body and what's coming from the mind. Yeah? And there's different kinds of pain involved there. Very much. Yeah? Because you experience some physical pain, and then if you're really attached to the body, then a lot of mental pain starts because you start to worry. You know, maybe I'm going to get sick. Oh, maybe this is some horrible disease. Oh, maybe I'm not going to recover. Oh, this is terrible. Maybe I'm going to get sicker and sicker and sicker. Maybe nobody's going to like me anymore. What am I going to do? How am I going to support myself if I do this? Who's going to come take care of me? All that becomes incredibly painful. You know, so you not only have your stomach ache, but then your mind is just, yeah, and that's definitely affected. You know, the physical pain affected them, you know, made the mental pain arise. And then the more anxious you get about it, yeah, then the body, you know, the body isn't going to heal very well. So the physical pain is going to increase. So they say that the wise, see pain as something that arises from contaminated aggregates. Contaminated being under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma. So they see pain as arising from the contaminated aggregates and endeavor to stop aversion to the pain. What we're talking about is the freaked out aversion. Yeah, like, I don't want this to happen to me. That kind of aversion. Okay? So this kind of acceptance that you were just talking about. You know, well, this is the nature of my body. So, if it's painful, it's painful. I don't need to get all freaked out about it. I can accept that. So you stop the aversion to the pain. Now, that already cuts a lot of pain. Then the wise also see pleasure as unsatisfactory and stop the attachment to the pleasure. Yeah, that is the challenge for America. Yeah. And see, in America, we are raised, you know, to seek more and more and more pleasure because it's the foundation for a good economy. Yeah. That's how to be a patriotic citizen. consume. Yeah. Okay. And so we're taught this, and this is, you know, we're taught that if you're going to be healthy, this is what you should want. I mean, it's real interesting sometimes, the societal model of healthy and the Dharma model of healthy, they can be very, very different. Okay? Societal model of healthy is you have great desires and you go all for getting your desires as much as you can. And your desires are mostly sense desires, you know? So that's what you want, and that's healthy, and go for it. And if you happen to be so lucky that you can get them, then you're called successful. You know, if you've had that karma from previous lives where you can get them, then you're called successful. Then you pat yourself on the back. Okay. If you don't have that good karma, then you blame everybody else who doesn't let you have it. Yeah. So it winds up to be a big merry-go-round. Yeah. So giving up the attachment to the seeking of sense pleasure. I mean, this is a very radical thing for us, really radical. And so giving up this pursuit of sense pleasure. And sometimes at the beginning of the practice, we say this very idealistically to us. You know, oh, sense pleasure, this is the root of all the problem. And then we superimpose all our Judaic Christian stuff of, oh, you know, you're really a sinner if you crave for pleasure, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff about the, you know, like being it's bad and you shouldn't do it and you're not supposed to do it, and sense pleasure is evil and lust is horrible, and we impose all of our very judgmental attitudes on this. And then we try and let go of all the things that we're attached to. Okay? But when we do that, we're not doing it with the proper reason. Yeah? We're doing it with the Judaic Christian, oh, you're bad and you're a sinner, so let's squeeze myself and, you know, wear a horsehair, you know, a shirt and go sit in the sea when it's, you know, 37 degrees and whip myself because my body's evil. That is not the way to get rid of the attachment. Yeah? Buddha was real, real clear about that. Yeah? So this kind of going on an extreme ascetic bent is not the way to cure yourself of attachment. Yeah? Pushing ourselves, doing, I'm a bad person because I have sense desire. I'm not supposed to have this. I'm not supposed to want this. You know, all these shoulds and supposed tos and oughts. And then squeezing ourselves to try and become what we think is, you know, now I'm a good practitioner. That's not the way to do it either. Because that is not coming from understanding. That's coming from having an idealized, self-created vision of what it means to be holy and trying to squeeze ourselves into that without really understanding what it means to be holy. So this really comes from very deep understanding, which means we have to think about it. Okay? To think about it, we have to get rid of some of the resistance that we have to thinking about it. Because at first sight, you know, at first hearing, this can be, it makes us kind of skittish, and I really don't want to think about this, so I just don't think about it. You know, I'll meditate on the four immeasurables instead, or I'll do purification instead, or I'll do something else, but I'm not going to think about this. But then it just kind of stays in there, and you're anxious, and you're nervous, and you feel weird. Yeah? And then when you sit there and you crave for chocolate or you crave for pizza, then you say, I'm bad, I'm not supposed to do that. That sense desire, so I'm not going to have chocolate, I'm not going to have pizza. I'm going to eat oatmeal, 3 meals a day. With no sugar and no milk, just boom, you know. Uncooked. And we do some really heavy, you know, should trip on ourselves. And then we just wind up, you know, tied up in knots. Yeah? And that's because there's no understanding. So we really have to kind of sit and think about these things and open our mind to understand them. Yeah? And not be, you know, it might make some of our previous held beliefs a little shaky. Yeah? It might make ego shake a bit. But if you have that perspective of it's making ego shake, that's good, instead of it's making me shake, that's bad. Okay? Then you can kind of do the meditation, gain the understanding, and then you lose interest in pursuing sense desire. So instead of having to do some big, you know, I shouldn't do this trip, it's just, who wants to do this? You know, it's like, it doesn't bring lasting pleasure. Why am I wasting my time doing this? Okay, and so it comes from understanding. Now, while you're in the process of gaining that understanding, when your understanding is still a little bit intellectual, you may want to distance yourself from the things you're attached to. Yeah? Simply because the understanding very quickly leaves us when the chocolate ice cream is in front of us. Yeah? It's like, we have a little bit of understanding of, you know, this isn't going to bring me real lasting happiness, but we forget that very quickly because of the force of previous habit. So at the beginning, you know, sometimes you just need to distance yourself from some of the things that you're most stuck on, but not as a way of punishing yourself, not as a way of making yourself unhappy, but just as a way of not letting yourself be controlled by those things. It's a way of freeing yourself. So instead of those things controlling you, you know, you're saying, I actually have some choice in the matter. And then using your time, you know, not just distancing yourself, but really using your time to gain understanding of how those things really don't bring lasting happiness. And really thinking deeply about the unsatisfactoriness of change. Yeah, so that you lose interest in those things. And then, you know, as you lose interest in those things, it might be that, you know, when they're there, you eat them again, or you have them, or you do whatever it is, and you can enjoy that they're there without clinging and grasping and craving and sadness when they disappear. It kind of changes our relationship. It doesn't mean that by letting go of the attachment, you're never going to have any pleasure again. Yeah. Because what we're trying to do is to understand that attachment is not pleasurable. And this means really piercing one of our biggest illusions is that, you know, the illusion that objects of attachment are pleasurable and that being attached to them is pleasurable. Both things.